Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Coach Sean McDermott's appearance on WGR is being brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at Northwest.com. By Kaleida Health, the official healthcare provider of the Buffalo Bills. By Dunn Tire, official tire dealer of the Buffalo Bills. And by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop at NorthtownKia.com.
All right, welcome back to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show here on a Buffalo Football Friday. Sal Capaccio with you, and it's time to welcome in Buffalo Bills head coach Sean McDermott for his weekly radio appearance. Good morning, Coach. Happy Football Friday to you.
Good morning, and happy Football Friday as well to you.
All right, Coach. Well, here we are, 48 hours or so away from obviously a really important game for this organization, this franchise. I've been kind of asking fans today to kind of what their emotions are like. You guys seem like you're always on an even keel. Like, what's it like for you inside the building today as far as preparation and, you know, thinking about the task at hand?
Well, I think like the fans, we're definitely getting excited. That said, we're so routine-based and, mm-hmm. and kind of going through our week and making sure we're ready to go.
All right, Coach. Obviously, some injury updates that we want to get to here, so let's get to our Barnes Firm, the Barnes Firm Injury Report, brought to you by the Barnes Firm. Injured for help, call 1-800-8-MILLION. Any updates you can give us on players this week that could possibly be out or how practice might go today?
Yes, Taylor Rapp will be out. Christian Benford remains in the concussion protocol. He will not be at practice today. He's also dealing with a personal situation that he has going on. Milano, Taron Johnson will be full today. We'll see how they continue to trend heading into game time.
On Matt Milano, Coach, I know there was some ambiguity on Monday when you were asked about it, and then he did participate in a limited fashion the last 2 days. How do you feel that his week has gone for him with the hamstring?
Yeah, I mean, kind of like you'd expect. You know, it was, you know, sore there and dealing with it. He's still dealing with it. It's just a matter of, again, how he handles it today. He's going to do a little bit more today just from a testing it out standpoint, and we'll see how it goes. I mean, you know, where it's kind of one of those things that's a little bit up in the air.
Okay, Coach. Obviously, with Taylor Rapp out, you know, we've seen Cole Bishop fill in for him. What have you seen from Cole as a rookie in his development when he came in a little bit? I know he had an injury early on, you know, preseason training camp. And what have you seen from him since, though, he got back on the field early in the season till now?
Yeah, I mean, that injury in camp there set him back, you know, just from a growth and experience standpoint, missing those reps. That being said, once he got in the flow and got rolling, ever since that first game, I think it was a great learning experience for him, and I think he's done a real nice job and will continue to grow as he moves forward here.
All right, Coach, your organization had three people who are going to be finalists for awards, and I'll just say this: I know a lot of Bills fans believe you should have been a finalist for Coach of the Year, but I digress right there. I don't need you to comment. I'll just let you know a lot of Bills fans believe that. But I will say that you have Comeback Player of the Year DeMar Hamlin as a finalist. I just want to go through each of these and kind of you speak about why these people represent this particular award and why they're worthy candidates. DeMar Hamlin, of course, from what he came back from to be a starter on this defense, why is he a good choice for a finalist for Comeback Player of the Year?
Well, like you said, I mean, you're talking about a guy who's had a heck of a journey and where he's come from, the significance of the injury and the journey he's been on. I don't think anybody out there can match that, right? And not that you want to. It's just an incredible example to me of mental toughness, faith, and courage.
Assistant Coach of the Year. That's only been around since 2014. Brian Daboll won it in 2020. Now Joe Brady is a finalist. Why is Joe Brady a worthy candidate for this award?
Well, coaching to me, a big part of coaching is who can take what they have and make it better, right? And means if you got a really good team and you can make it a great team, if you have a, you know, whatever, you can fill in the blanks. It's just, hey, what do you do with what you have? And I think Joe's done a really good job of creating a an environment on the offensive side of the ball and a certain energy, and then taking the strength of his players and doing things with it. And I think that's a sign of a good coach.
And you've said before here and elsewhere that you believe Josh is the MVP of the league. Why does Josh have the – what exemplifies Josh as a worthy MVP candidate and possible winner this year?
Well, like I've mentioned before, everyone sees what his production has been on the field. I do think that part of the difference this year has been you know, his decision-making and his disciplined decision-making, and that'll need to continue. And then his leadership overall on our football team and the impact that has brought to our team.
Josh, obviously protecting the football very well this year. So are the Chiefs, obviously, since the Week 11 game against you guys. I don't think they have a turnover. I know Mahomes has not thrown an interception. How important will ball security and, you know, that particular aspect of the game be this week, just like it was last week with three turnovers you guys forced against the Ravens?
Well, the fundamentals are going to be important, right? The blocking, the tackling, the throwing, the catching, the kicking, all those areas are going to be important, which includes, you know, protecting the house as far as taking care of the football.
All right, Coach, obviously a team you're very familiar with. I asked Cam Lewis the other day, I was like, is it just as simple as we know you know us, go out there and play? He said, kind of, but you know they're going to have some wrinkles too, right? Is that really what it comes down to? Hey, we know basically what they're going to do. We just have to be aware of if they're going to try a little bit some things different, and we got to have a few things planned ourselves.
Yeah, I would say that's accurate. I think more than anything, it's about execution this time of year and who's able to execute, you know, play after play. So that's a, you know, what Cam said, I agree with.
And then on the other side, on the defensive side of the ball, Chris Jones, obviously a guy you have to reckon with, and you've seen him. What makes him a special, Coach? Why can he be a game wrecker?
Oh boy! Well, this time of year in particular, he usually plays at a very high level. You know, if you go back and watch all their postseason runs and their Super Bowls, it's usually Chris Jones on the defensive side, at least, you know, making those plays that impact the game. And I believe he did it last year in their Super Bowl win. And you just have to, you've got to make sure that you account for him in everything you do.
All right, and then obviously I can't let you go without asking about preparing for Patrick Mahomes. You guys have had, you know, you had Bo Nix who had an outstanding season. You had Lamar last week, Patrick Mahomes this week. It seems like it never ends, but here you have a three-time Super Bowl champion. What makes him so special in running that offense, especially at Arrowhead?
Yeah, I mean, you name the quarterbacks, right, and the head coaches. You're saying Sean Payton the first round, John Harbaugh the next round, yeah. And then now Andy Reid. It's a heck of a challenge, right? And you're saying these quarterbacks now, Patrick Mahomes. You know, I think our defense has done a really good job through the first two games. This challenge will be even bigger for us. So we've got to play well in all three phases and play complementary football.
Sean, good luck. Safe travels to Kansas City. And once again, I'll say I think I speak for many, many Bills fans, all of them listening here, where I can't wait to talk to you and hopefully we do coming up in the next couple of weeks. Thanks a lot, Coach.
All right, sounds great. Thanks, Sal. Have a great weekend.
You got it. That is Sean McDermott, head coach of the Bills. He has ruled out safety Taylor Rapp from this game.
Welcome to a second hour of a Tuesday edition of One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker, and joined now, as we are every Tuesday, by ESPN NFL analyst Dan Orlovsky, whose appearances on One Bills Live are presented by Caesars Sportsbook, an official mobile sports betting partner of the Buffalo Bills. All right, Dan, it happened by the slimmest of margins. The Bills have advanced to the AFC title game after eking out a win over the Ravens. And you touched on it when we talked to you last week, Bills defense playing more man coverage here late in the season. That continued on Sunday night, and they blitzed at a rate of right around 48%. Could you address mm-hmm. the game called by Babich against Lamar and this offense?
Yeah, it was really impressive to make sure that at least you did everything you could from a defensive perspective to I think one of two things. One, you tried to not expose yourself too much to what could be some schematic weakness. We saw first snap of the game, base personnel, three linebackers were on the field. Tyrann was off, and they put Williams at the line of scrimmage to just try to get bodies there. And I do think that helped them a little bit early on in the run. And then, you know, try to take advantage of some of the things that might be their weaknesses with Zay Flowers out and Baltimore's offense, trying to play a little bit more man coverage, not having to have so many different people with eyes on in that zone structure and having to pay attention to too many things. So I thought it was really smart in that regard. I thought some of the stuff that they did in the red zone, you know, sneakily really good. You know, I go back to the after the big post to Bateman and them put in specifically on that third down, which is a little bit more of a pass obvious situation. I think it's third and goal from the 3 or 4 yard line. They only got three defensive linemen on the field and they got two backers and six DBs in that situation. That's a little abnormal that close to the goal line. And that's one of the huge plays in the game. Milano spies Lamar and, you know, he enforces a little bit of a check down because they got so many people in coverage. And then the bang-bang play for Derrick Henry or on Derrick Henry to force that field goal is huge. And so I thought some of the scheme stuff that they did just personnel-wise was super important to them to protect but also attack.
And in this game, you knew it was going to come down. I thought you were going to have to score 30 to win this game, even with the weather the way it was, cold. But I thought whoever's going to play was going to have to play more mistake-free than the other guy, and certainly the Bills did that. They had one penalty for 10 yards, one other penalty that was called that was declined. Baltimore had 5 for 43, and then, of course, the three turnovers were absolutely monumental in this.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, the Bills' offensive numbers were pedestrian, or, you know, they were mid. Baltimore, you've got to be looking at themselves going, how do we do this to ourselves at the end of this game?
Yeah, Steve, I think that what's been probably the most impressive thing, and it was probably the most obvious of last week, is how this has really become like an organizational change philosophically. The evolution and the growth of what they used to be and kind of where they are in the middle of right now. It's not just Josh Allen. You know, if you just watch the team play this year and watch how the quarterback has played this year and watch how the defense has played this year, it is this overall organizational philosophy of we've done it one way, you know, like it's, and it was really awesome, you know, where they could throw it with anybody and it's big play after big play after big play. And, you know, then, you know, was it the best? You know, it was really good, but was it the best? Was it going to be the best way to maybe go try and win a Super Bowl? And, you know, the evolution and growth of this offense is efficiency and owning the line of scrimmage and being able to control the football game and being able to play in a way that however defense tells you you have to play, you're capable of doing it. And the quarterback playing in this very mature and efficient and high. I mean, they ran 26 snaps the other night on offense, 17 runs for 4.5 yards a clip, and the quarterback was 8 of 9. Man, that screams efficiency.
Yeah.
So the defense taking the football away, and it's the premise of we're really good. We're even better, and we're really hard to be beat by somebody if we don't beat ourselves. And I think that you're just seeing this overall kind of organizational shift, growth, and development. It's got them back in the AFC title.
Yeah.
All right, so tell me your thoughts on this, because in the last 2 weeks – this Bills run game has hung 357 yards on the number 3 run defense and the number 1 run defense in football. And now they're facing a Chiefs run defense that's also top 10. They're number 8. But it seems like the Bills run game with this offensive line is at a place where they can get yards whenever the hell they want. And no one has been able to tell them different. Are you expecting much of the same this week?
Yeah, I think there's one really specific way that you can have success running the football against the Chiefs as well. You know, but I think that the thing that Buffalo has done such a good job of, and they did another good job of it last week, is they very rarely don't get the run started. More often than not, the run play gets started. And, you know, we've talked about it. Really good blocking wide receivers, the 6th offensive lineman on there so consistently. You know, the vision by Cook and Davis. And so you're calling these runs, and I hate to keep going back to this word, but you're consistently efficient in doing so. And then some of these 2 or 3, 4 yard runs are going for like 8, 9, 11 yards. And so I think their ability to control the line of scrimmage has been paramount. I think it will be again. I think they're capable of doing it. You know, Kansas City's defense is not what it was last year in a couple different ways. And one of the ways is if you motion and run the football at them, they get displaced a little bit at the second level. And so I would expect run game wise, that would be something to pay attention to. I would also say this, and we're going to do this on NFL Live this week, but when you watch Kansas City defensively and you see a 6 or 7 yard run, one of the things I just mentioned was some of that motion stuff. And then one of the things that you see more than you did in the past is, well, where's number 95? He's not on the field. And I think that is something that is showing a little bit more. I don't know why, but when he's not on the field, Chris Jones, who's an all-timer, I think that teams are automatically checking into running the football, because when he's not on the field, you are much more capable of creating some, you know, pretty darn good runs, not 2, 3, 4 runs, but 7, 8, 9 yarders.
Yeah. And so we know that the Bills were far more effective running the football in the first half against the Ravens than they were in the second half when Baltimore made some defensive adjustments. Can Kansas City go to school on any of that in terms of what Baltimore put out there in the second half to kind of neutralize that run game a little bit?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, they're so different philosophically. They're right. So different structurally. You guys know this. When you play against that team, you've got to be ready for a run blitz and a pass blitz on every play, because they can come at any moment. That's not necessarily who Baltimore is and or was. I thought, you know, they were much better at handling the interior of the offensive line, Baltimore being in the second half. So I don't think that there's you got to win your blocks. I don't think that there's a ton schematically that I would say Kansas City would steal from Baltimore. And I would go back to the last time these two teams played. It really wasn't the run game. It really was the pass game. It really was them being so ready for some of those zero blitzes from Kansas City. And I think the question has to get posed to Kansas City of, are they going to attack the way that they did last time?
Yeah, I mean, that's the real question. What can the Bills do against the pressure? The Chiefs really showed up big in their pass rush with Karloftis and Chris Jones. Karloftis showed up huge. I mean, he had 3 sacks, and they got a ton of pressure. And we noticed, too, they moved Chris Jones around more so than usual. What do you make of that?
Well, one, I would tell you, Houston's offensive line is not even in the same galaxy as Buffalo's. So that's part of, you know, why the performance was last week. The one benefit that Buffalo had last time was they were at home and there was so much shifting and motioning. So they have to, one, figure out if they can operate in that capacity on the road, Arrowhead, clock, noise, all that. And then have the plan for if they can't. And if they can't, what is going to be the answer? Is it going to be a little bit of tempo? Is it going to be a little bit of no huddle? Obviously, being really good on early downs minimizes the amount that Kansas City could get after that or into that stuff. But if you can continue to control the line of scrimmage, you can minimize some of the Star Wars pressures you'll see.
And then with respect to the Chiefs running game, Pacheco back in the fold. He did not play in the Week 11 game, as we know. He did not look like he's back to his old self just yet, and maybe part of that is because of the long layoff from Christmas Day, which was really the last time a lot of those Chiefs starters had last played. Are you expecting better from him this week, just from a rust standpoint? Because it didn't look like the explosive Isaiah Pacheco that we're used to seeing.
Yeah, I would expect him another step. But I think the two things, you know, these run games are kind of similar, you know, philosophy wise. Kansas City's not going to run 4 or 5 different runs at you. You're going to get 2 different runs. You know, if you are the Bills, more often than not, you're going to get very similar, like 4x1. We've talked about that, a little bit of the zone read. You'll get that. And so double teams got to be really good, and you got to shut it down on the backside. And then you'll get their split flow, which is everybody zoning one side and somebody coming back across from the other out of 12 personnel, 1 back 2 tight end. And so I think those are the two things that they've got to really hone in on defensively against Kansas City. But I do think that some of the Hunt is as big a deal for me, Chris, as is Pacheco. Like, he just continues to churn out positive yards against defenses. And while you're not maybe getting the huge chunks, this is the most efficient ball control 10-plus play drive offense in the league. So, you know, getting him to not making a 2-yard run into a 4-yard run, I think is just as big as minimizing some of the explosives.
What do you think is going to be the big difference for this Chiefs offense? Now that they've got, you know, Travis Kelce has obviously stepped up in this last playoff game. He had an okay regular season, but when the chips are down, the Chiefs are, you know, it's Pat Mahomes, it's Travis Kelce, and it's Andy Reid, and it's hard to get them off the field, particularly when they've got a guy like Pacheco there and the other tight end as well. So I'm in this game.
Their 12 personnel is good.
In this game, I think the third down offense of the Chiefs is really going to be critical because of the Bills want probably to obviously get them off the field, but also do the same thing to the Chiefs. Stay on the field, shorten the game, be efficient, score every drive if you can, and then, you know, just outdistance the Chiefs like they did in Buffalo.
Yeah, I mean, this game screams. First of all, it's heavyweight after heavyweight. I mean, how awesome is this that we as football fans get this? You know, it's a guy that has gone toe-to-toe against Patrick twice in the playoffs, and Patrick's knocked him out or kept him out, and he's having an all-time great historical best season of his career, and he's trying to go on the road to beat a guy that doesn't lose there, and he's on, you know, the precipice of history in and of itself. And so, like, how awesome is that as football fans? This game screams of who gets the ball last or who has the ball with, you know, a huge play late in the game or who doesn't make that critical mistake late in the game. Both quarterbacks have done a really good job of that, Josh, all season. Patrick very much so of late. You know, I'd say, Steve, it's the – what was the issue 5, 6, 7 years ago just feels like the issue again. In those huge moments, how do you, one, stop Kelce while also not exposing other parts of your defense? Because everyone that sits there and says, well, double them, you only get 11. So that sounds great, but you only get 11. And there are other people that they're not Tyreek Hill, no, but they can still hurt you after 5 or 6 throws. You know, it's maybe not the 70 yarder, but it's 4 or 5 straight completions that get 60 yards. And then also the legs of the quarterback. And so you got to try to throw off the timing of those two guys while also letting an edge player like an Epinesa or a Rousseau or even a Vaughn, like, it wear out some of those tackles. And if you can do that, it goes a huge, huge way to helping your defense play well.
That's a good segue into my last one for you, Dan. They've moved Joe Tooney from left guard to left tackle to try to shore up some pass protection issues on the edge. Where, if at all, has that compromised their offensive line play? Are they just as sound as they've always been in the run game? Has it been compromised because guard to guard they're not the same anymore? Maybe just kind of shed some light on what you've seen since that switch has been made.
Yeah, one, they don't get up to the backers as consistently in the run game as they did, nor do they displace the defensive tackles as much. I mean, Kansas City really had to figure out which way they were going to prioritize, trying to run the football or trying to protect Patrick. They obviously prioritized protecting Patrick, probably rightfully so, but, you know, they're not running. You know, this is one of the best interior three offensive lines in the NFL with the guards Trey Smith and Tooney as well as Creed Humphrey at center. So it's not as dominant. It's still a good unit, but not as dominant. Also in the pass protection game, you know, the twist games on the inside have become a little bit more of an issue rather than having to chip and help that tackle on the outside. So, you know, you're talking about an interior pass rush situation that probably has to wreak a little bit more havoc than it has for Buffalo.
Good stuff, Dan. Appreciate you, man.
We'll talk to you about it next week.
Thanks, guys.
All right, be good.
Enjoy.
You too.
All right, that's Dan Orlovsky joining us as he does every Tuesday. Appearances brought to you by Caesars Sportsbook.
Proud to welcome Alex Gold back as we continue our annual exchange program with the fan in Kansas City. Bills and Chiefs yet again here. What's it feel like, Alex? I mean, are maybe you or... do you sense that Chiefs fans are at, like, we're pushing our luck here, having to beat the Bills again? Or is there instead sort of a typical, maybe high level of confidence?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think this week in general, the feeling is more and more people recognizing that the Chiefs have become just the villain of the NFL. So I would say that that's the different feeling going into this matchup. I mean, I know they've played numerous times in the postseason, but it's still been a bit since they played in an AFC title game. And so that's what makes this one feel a little bit different, coupled with just the narratives that are out there right now and that weren't there maybe in some of the prior matchups. As far as the fact that it's the Bills and not the Ravens, it was a mixed bag for a lot of fans. Like, personally, I said last week that I wanted to see the Ravens come to Kansas City more so than Buffalo. And the thought there was just that kind of what we saw, which is I think Lamar Jackson and the Ravens are more prone to making mistakes than Josh Allen is. And, I mean, that bared out at least on Sunday. And that was my reasoning. Plus, the Chiefs had slowed down Derrick Henry, not just since he was with Baltimore, but back to his Tennessee days in the playoffs as well. So this was, of the two potential matchups, was not the one I wanted, not the one that my co-host wanted. But that's not the feeling, I would say, of the majority of fans. I think a lot of people here have viewed the Chiefs, you know, dominance of Buffalo in the playoffs, and that's enough for a lot of people.
Are people taking it hard being the devil, being perceived as everybody's sick of you? I mean, it's hard not to take that personally, but I think any team, the Bills could win three Super Bowls in a row or two in a row here, and I think people around the country would start feeling that way about them. Like, we just get tired faster than ever now, and so I think, you know, that's really it. So, I don't know, try not to take it too hard.
No question. No, I mean, you're right. I mean, you win a lot and people get sick of you. And that's ultimately what has happened here. We know there's plenty of examples in sports, but that's also been the NFL in particular. I mean, everybody points to the Patriots, but even in the 90s, I understand in Buffalo ultimately not resulting in a Super Bowl, but still it was the Bills, it was the Cowboys, the Niners were mixed in. Like, you know, and then it was the Packers for a little bit, like the Rams ultimately when they lost after they won one, it was to the Patriots, which started their run. Like, it's not like, you know, we talk about parity in the NFL, and there is for playoff spots, but there usually is not parity when it comes to the conference title games and ultimately the Super Bowl all that much. I mean, here we are, as you said, we're talking Chiefs-Bills yet again, second AFC title game, but the fourth time in the last couple of years for a playoff game. So, it has been tough, I think, for people here. I mean, I grew up in Kansas City, and if you would have thought that a team from KC, if you had told me a team from KC would be the villain in sports, you know, 15 years ago or 10 years ago, I would have called you crazy. I mean, we're used to here, I'm sure, like in Buffalo, where it's like, okay, you know, the Royals finally made a run to the World Series, and so everybody was rooting for the Royals. You know, the Chiefs, not that long ago, people were rooting for them to win. So it's just kind of what happens in sports. I think here the more the annoyance has been, like, you want to say the Chiefs get calls, that's fine. Mahomes gets calls, that's fine. It's the conspiracy of, like, it's all rigged and somehow these 32 NFL owners have conspired, you know, stuff that annoys people more.
I will say that if you don't go back this far, I would say in the early 90s, it was definitely true about the Bills. And part of it with the Bills thing was that they were losing the Super Bowls, and the third one was a blowout, sure. Or the second and the third one kind of both were blowouts, and there was a lot of, like, late night.
Can we please get a good game here,
right.
Please?
And then in the AFC Championship the fourth year, you got Montana and the Chiefs, and everybody loved that. So I think right around then was maybe there was the peak feeling of the Bills were kind of, like, we're tired of them. And, Bulldog, remember talking to Dick Enberg? When he was broadcasting for the Padres, we got in touch with Dick Enberg, who called most of those games, and I made some reference to that to him. He's an idol of mine. And I made some reference to that. Yeah, a legend, absolutely. Made some reference of that to him, and, you know, I would regret it, because he's like, well, I never thought that. that wasn't my doing, you know, the idea that the country was kind of tired of the Bills. So, long time ago, though. Chiefs minus two here, up a little bit from when it opened. Does that seem right to you?
So the look ahead lines, you know, had the Chiefs as 1.5 point favorites, I think, or 1 point favorites on Buffalo before last Sunday's games, and then against Baltimore. The thought here was if either team would have had a really impressive showing, that the Chiefs could have opened up as underdogs, but not to say that Buffalo or Baltimore looked bad, but just, like, it wasn't, you know, neither one had a, you know, would have been a dominating win the way both teams played. I'm sure It's not like, you know, it's not like the Bills looked amazing. And so I think based off of that performance, it sounds about right to me. I mean, also given the history, I know each year is a new thing and metrics and everything are new each year. But I think considering the venue and everything, where home field these days is worth 1.6 something or whatever it is, points. Yeah, I think that's about right. You know, ultimately, it doesn't mean anything for the teams. But I think when you take a look at the earlier matchup, you know, I don't think that matchup is at all what we're going to see. I'm not even talking about the result. I'm just talking about, like, for both teams. Week 11 was a long time ago, and both of these teams look a lot different.
Yeah, the Chiefs were missing some key people in that matchup. The Bills also were missing some key people in that matchup. And these teams, well, you can tell us about the Chiefs end of it. The Bills have got some concerns. Milano's got like a hamstring soreness. They're not calling it a pull or a tweak or anything, but just sore. They've got their number one corner, at least I think in most people's opinions, Christian Benford in concussion protocol. And Taylor Rapp, a starting safety, he's got a hip thing, and he didn't even go through a light walkthrough today. How are the Chiefs in that respect, Alex?
I mean, you know, it's the cliche thing, getting healthy at the right time. But truly, I don't think there's a healthier team. I said this last week going into the Texans game, a healthier team in the postseason. I mean, you know, every team's had injuries all year. The Chiefs have been banged up. But you take a look, whether it's just that Week 11 game or even over the last couple of weeks, with the exception of Mecole Hardman staying on IR and not getting off of IR, I mean, that's it, guys. I mean, they're healthy. Rashee Rice has been out all year after the Week 4 game, but they've gotten Hollywood Brown back. He didn't play in Week 11. Charles Omenihu tore an ACL in last year's AFC title game. He's been back for a couple weeks. Jalen Watson, this will be his second game back. He's the team's number two corner, also wasn't in that Week 11 game. So they're pretty much as full go as you can be for an AFC or NFC title game this late in January. So that's added to some confidence for some fans that, okay, what Buffalo was able to do, putting up over 30, that the Chiefs defense is much better than what they were at that point in time. And I think the numbers bear that out. And then, as you were saying, the Bills are going to get some players potentially back, unless there's some change with some of the guys that you just brought up there. So I just think this is potentially going to, game plan wise for both teams, look completely different. I mean, I think the Chiefs defensively are just better positioned personnel wise to handle. I mean, that was the game where Amari Cooper had a couple deep shots down the field when they were going up against a guy named Nazi Johnson, who really should be this team's third or fourth corner, and they were asking him to match up with potentially the best receiver on the field. So this will be, I think, a lot different. I don't know if the result's different, but I don't think this will be anything like what we saw for either team back in Week 11.
Alex Gold from the Fan in Kansas City, Mike Schoepp and the Bulldog here on WGR. A couple more players that missed the game for the Chiefs. I think you did mention Hollywood Brown not being back yet, but Butker didn't. That was right before the Bills game, I think, is when they announced he went out.
Yeah.
And also Isaiah Pacheco. Where are the Chiefs at with Pacheco? Like, is he not the same player? Sometimes, you know, guys come back. And maybe this is true of Brown, too. You'll tell us. But come back from the injury and just, like, this is the playoffs, late season push, everything like that. And you get him out there. But every time I look up, it's still Kareem Hunt.
Fans are hoping that's what it is. Honestly, that's been the discussion this week, is that Kareem Hunt should get the bulk of the carries. Isaiah Pacheco, I don't know if it's a health thing where he still isn't fully recovered from the ankle injury, but you take a look at short yardage, and that's why the touchdown numbers over the last six games for each of them has been more in favor of Kareem Hunt, even if the yardage is actually fairly similar. But the vision of Kareem Hunt is far better than Pacheco. It's not something that people really maybe notice as much when Pacheco was the guy, but when Kareem Hunt took over early on in the year, that was something that was pretty noticeable. And this past week against the Texans, the first couple red zone opportunities where the Chiefs struggled, they ran 11 plays and had negative 6 yards, or maybe it was 6 yards and negative 11 yards. Out of those plays, those were all Pacheco touches, and Kareem Hunt didn't touch the ball really until the second half. Then you saw a crucial 4th-and-1. It was Kareem Hunt. So the thought here, at least among fans, is that it should be Hunt over Pacheco. We'll see if that's the split that they'll go with. It's been more leaning towards Isaiah Pacheco for the most part, but that's been a conversation here. On the Hollywood Brown thing, he looked like a guy that they had big plans for all year. The minute he played in the Texans game a couple weeks back, that that injury in the preseason really was devastating because it makes you wonder what kind of season he was going to put together. But he looks like he's good to go. This past week, they just didn't throw to wide receivers. Xavier Worthy was the only wide receiver against Houston that had a catch. You know, Travis Kelce was wide open in the middle of the field. I'm sure that's not going to be the case against Buffalo. They're going to make Hollywood Brown or DeAndre Hopkins or Xavier Worthy beat him. I mean, Kelce just had nobody around him on that 49-yard touchdown, or 49-yard reception, I should say. But Hollywood Brown is going to be a factor in this game. I think if the Chiefs are to win, I'll be stunned if he's not involved. And he's looked really good in these underneath routes, kind of the same Rashee Rice routes from a year ago. That's where they're having Brown and Xavier Worthy work in particular.
What kind of form do you feel like overall the offense is in heading into this game? We can talk about the health of the players, and it sounds like you'll have a full complement of guys. But it wasn't super smooth against Houston. There's a tough pass rush, one of the best pairs of pass rushers in the league, with Hunter and Will Anderson. But I'm just curious, like, was there talk of rust after that game, because they had, you know, a significant amount of time off?
No doubt. Absolutely. And this was an offense that was playing really well after that Texans game, after that Steelers game. It was the best the offense had looked really the entire season. Some of that was because Hollywood Brown was part of it. But this past week, I think it was a combination. It was the red zone struggles that they had for much of the season that I referenced the first couple drives, but that was what we saw a lot of the season. So red zone execution was problematic for them. I think we saw the left tackle and left side of that line become an issue. I do think a lot of that was credit to Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter, and that'll be the big question in this game against Buffalo Sunday night is, okay, I think the Chiefs already face the best front that they're going to have to deal with if they, you know, go on this run, whether it's Buffalo or even beyond that. And so maybe that's all it was. Otherwise, that would be a huge problem for them going up against the Bills front. Is how Joe Tooney is going to perform. Now, when they played Buffalo in Week 11, that was still when Wanye Morris, the Chiefs' second-year player, was playing tackle, before they had pulled the plug on that and got on with the all-pro guard and moved him out to tackle. So at least here in Kansas City, everybody's thinking that this will be a line that holds its own better than it did in Week 11, and certainly better than it did against the Texans, just because, you know, not that it's a bad Bills front. I think that the Texans front is much more of a challenge than what they're going to see on Sunday.
You mentioned before Worthy being the only Chiefs wide receiver to catch a pass in the playoffs. Isn't it wild, just these two teams? And I guess you could do this with Baltimore too, the cream of the crop in the conference, just not having the goods, it seems, at receiver. I mean, that can change any given week. I think Brown's really good. Worthy's a rookie, so that can take time, but Alex, in the playoffs, the Bills have had two playoff games. They have two receivers that have caught more than two passes in the games combined. Like, that's Shakir, who has 12, and Curtis Samuel with 5, more so in the Denver game than most recently. Everybody else is 2 or fewer. Amari Cooper's over-under, that was a big trade. His over-under in this game is 1.5, minus 140 to the under. Like, that's what he is. He's one catch. What's DeAndre Hopkins? Is he one catch?
I mean, look, that was exactly what we were discussing on our show today. You're right. I mean, these trades that went down, it's funny how everybody viewed them. I mean, in Kansas City, when you guys traded for Amari Cooper, people were bummed here. Like, that was the guy that folks here really wanted, especially when they saw the compensation. And then everybody's like, well, maybe Deontay Johnson. And we all know how that's turned out. It was a non-factor for Baltimore and everybody, thank goodness. And then D-Hop, actually, you know, in the regular season, the first 4 games was the most production he really had in a Chiefs uniform. And then everybody thought, well, maybe they're just, you know, saving him for the playoffs. Well, this past week, he was on the field less than what he was in the regular season, his snap count at least. And so, you know, today he was asked by the media, hey, are you 100%? Are you hurt? And he said, yeah, I'm good. It's bizarre. Here everybody's skeptical that he's hurt, because otherwise it makes no sense. I don't think he's suddenly washed just like that, because he did put together a couple of big-time performances since he joined the team. It's bizarre. I think it wouldn't surprise me if we find out that there's an injury there. But to your overall point about these wide receivers in the AFC, here in Kansas City, last year going into the playoffs, nobody was confident in the wide receiver room. I mean, MVS, remember, hadn't done anything, and then he did come up with catches, of course, in the playoffs.
Yep.
This year, everybody feels better in Kansas City. In fact, entering the postseason, folks in KC thought that their wide receiver room was better than any of the other AFC teams, certainly not the NFC, but the AFC teams, considering Brown and Worthy and what they and DeAndre Hopkins, what they had looked like towards the end of the regular season. So, yeah, and then Travis Kelce goes and has a huge game last week. So it is bizarre. There's definitely not the flat-out, I guess, household name at wide receiver that has lived up to it at this point in time. But if something tells me that Amari Cooper or DeAndre Hopkins will have somewhat of a say this go-around in the AFC title game.
Alex, you have any sense at this point, still a few days out, what kind of numbers of Bills fans might make their way into the stadium? Like, how available might tickets be? Is there any level of fan fatigue? Like, oh, another AFC title game. I'm so bored.
Yeah. I mean, look, that's a great question, though, about the ticket. So the ticket pricing, I haven't taken an updated look to see just where the market is sitting. As far as fatigue, last week, what was interesting for the divisional round, I don't know if it was weather. It was brutally cold last week. It's going to be much better this Sunday, I think 30 degrees, high 20s or something. So that's nothing for Bills and Chiefs fans compared to what both have had. But the divisional round game, it was really cold, and I think there was fatigue with that round. Like, okay, we're spoiled here. It's a divisional round. Let's get to this AFC title game thing. And so prices really dipped before kickoff. You could sit downstairs for the Chiefs-Texans game. I'm talking like good seats downstairs for $1.15 a piece if you waited to an hour before kickoff. It was crazy on a couple of the secondary markets. Right now, it's nowhere near that kind of drop, and it's held its own. Mm-hmm. I guess you guys tell me if you expect Bills fans to travel. I mean, it's been a couple years for an AFC title game for you guys. For Kansas City, I think with the weather being nice, there were some fans that said, we're going to save our money for the title game instead of spending money divisional round weekend.
I think we're saving it for 2 weeks.
that could be right.
For New Orleans,
We just now. All I know is this fan base loves to travel. So just how available that is, how convenient that'll be.
If you guys know how this goes. I mean, if you're willing to, if you go on any of the secondary markets, of course, if folks are willing to pay them, pay the pretty penny that's out there, of course, they definitely can find their way in.
Do you go to New Orleans win or lose, or just when you win, or what?
So we would only go if the Chiefs win. And honestly, we've been spoiled. Our station has just been sending one show the last couple of years. So I've gotten to three. And this year they're sending our morning show. It's hard to complain, right? We've gone to three. So they're sending our morning show if the Chiefs win. So we won't make the trip to New Orleans as our show goes. But, it's why we've given our morning show a hard time because we didn't go the Bucs year where they lost and got killed by Tom Brady and company. So we're 3-0 as a show when we go. So we'll see what happens. I know obviously you guys don't care about that. Have you been Shope? Have you gone to a Super Bowl?
I like it for you. I've been to five. Bulldog and I have done three together, but the most recent was 2006,
Detroit.
Okay.
So
I'll say this though: if the Bills win and you guys end up going. You'll have to tell me what you think of Radio Row compared to them because Vegas was back a little bit last year, I would say. Like, it had some of the celebrities and all that. Otherwise, everybody I talked to that used to go back, 10 years ago or whatever, says it's not the same. It's not the same vibe as what it used to be.
They stay away from it.
Yeah, they stay away. And I think, honestly, I think once they altered it with COVID, I think that changed it for a lot of people. Everybody figured out that they can do these interviews over Zoom, even if there's people on site, and I think it's changed just the whole dynamic of Radio Row.
Interesting. Well, if it gives you something to start our conversation with on Friday, you can know that we were talking about it.
There you go. Yeah, look, I appreciate the fact that we didn't have to talk about officiating too much with you guys. I'll give you credit on that. As you can imagine, it's been a big part of our week.
So. I guess when you're there seems to be some data to support the skepticism, but when you're great and at home all the time, like, you get calls in sports. It's not a scandal to me. It's just it's annoying, but it was annoying for the Pistons when Jordan showed up or whatever. Like, it's just normal. So we'll have to see if the Bills can overcome that. The Chiefs have been called for six penalties in the three playoff meetings combined. Leave with that. Thank you, Alex, and we'll talk on Friday.
All right, guys. Sound good.
We didn't talk about officiating until he was signing off, and then through the last haymaker.
right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker here with you, and pleased to be joined now by former Chiefs and Super Bowl winning offensive lineman Mitchell Schwartz joining us here on the show to talk a little Chiefs with us. And first things first here, Mitchell, is this just kind of like old hat for Chiefs fans? Like, oh, yeah, you know, just, this is a formality here. You know, we've done six of these in a row before, so, you know, it's just another game on the schedule.
Yeah, unfortunately, it kind of does feel like that because it takes away from the specialness of it. You know, I think when you take the step back and you look at what the last 7 years have been like, you start to realize, oh, man, this is pretty crazy. But, you know, when you have too much of a good thing, sometimes you lose the appreciation for it. And I know social media isn't the best place to live for everybody, but it can lead to some interesting dynamics on there.
It's interesting, too, because of all the success the Chiefs have had, they put together like 11 wins coming into Buffalo. They come out with – they're like – 15 and 1 going into the last game, and people are doing their best to throw darts at them because, you know, they're not scoring a ton of points. They're winning one score games. They're not putting these people away. They don't look like 2-time defending champions, except that they're 15-1. How much of that is real? I mean, they're not quite the team they once were, but how much also is it? It's championship DNA.
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, you can't sit here and say that it was the cleanest 15-1 of all time. You know, there's a lot of games that you like to say could have been won by double digits, you know, put them away in the third and fourth quarter. There's obviously those games, the Denver game, the field goal block at the end, which is a skilled play. You know, that's something that Leo Chenal, he learned earlier in the game, I can get this guy. He tried to block a couple kicks before that, but he really turned it into overdrive. And that's a skilled play taking advantage of a weakness that the other team had shown. So, you know, you can look at it as, oh man, they're a missed kick away, but they're also a great special teams play, you know, towards, you know, 15-1. There's the Raiders game where they botch the snap and fumble and kind of ruins the end of that game. And again, you can say, oh, well, you know, the Raiders blew it, all this stuff. But we've seen now, to your point, that this is a team that's obviously been there, done that. And there's no worry at the end of a game. There's no, oh, man, we got to do this. There's no panic. Or sometimes you see that creeping into other teams that aren't quite as used to it. So it's definitely, you know, an earned record. And it's also something that's earned through having had that history, having had that comfortability that when these moments get to be where they are, you know, the kickers made game winners to win the Super Bowl. You know, the quarterback is, you know, multiple-time MVP, multiple-time Super Bowl winner and MVP. You know, all these kind of things that come together that really give the team a lot of trust that, hey, however it looks, however ugly it might be, we're going to find a way to win this thing in the end.
Okay, so if we go back to the Week 11 matchup, it looked like the Chiefs' defense was pretty dead set on slowing down James Cook, and they did a good job of that, focusing on the run. The guy that got loose was Khalil Shakir. Just in the history of watching the Chiefs, especially in repeat matchups with opponents, do you often find that the defensive game plan centers around what hurt them most in the previous matchup, and do you anticipate that Khalil Shakir will be public enemy number one of Steve Spagnuolo?
I think it gets back to less what hurt them the last time and more towards what are you comfortable losing to. You know, if you're Spags and you're saying, all right, if we accept, you know, Shakir might go off, if we keep Cook under control and we keep Allen under control, and if that's why we lose, then we're okay with that. You know, that was always kind of the offensive line mentality, you know, pass block wise. Obviously, you guys know Von Miller pretty well by now. You know, his spin move, you don't necessarily want to lose to his spin move in a critical situation. You know, if you lose to something else, like, okay, but I didn't lose to the thing that he does best. So sometimes you do have to, you know, give a little bit in those circumstances. I did think it was interesting to me that the Chiefs do a lot of three down stuff. It feels like later in the season, they haven't done quite as much of the three defensive linemen on the pass rush downs with the two linebackers, you know, kind of walking around. And last game, Spencer Brown wasn't playing a right tackle, and I thought that would have been a great opportunity to run that front, which puts Chris Jones over the right tackle. You know, we see what he does to right tackles on the regular.
Yeah.
I thought that was a key matchup that they could exploit, Chris Jones against a backup right tackle. And for whatever reason, that just wasn't a defensive front that Spags leaned into that day. So I'm not one that thinks, oh, Andy Reid holds things back or Spags holds things back. That game gave me a little bit of pause defensively. It did seem like it wasn't really in tune with what he would normally do. It wasn't really in tune with how he would maybe spy Josh Allen or keep him in the pocket, you know, force him to think about things when he gets in space running the ball. So as much as you'd like to say, oh, that was only, you know, week 11, 8-9 weeks ago, this is a pretty similar matchup coming in, I think it's going to be drastically different. And I don't think you can draw as many parallels between that game and this game as you might ordinarily do.
Yeah, what do you think is the most different thing about this Chiefs team from week 11 to now week whatever it is, 20?
I think offensively, I mean, last game maybe wasn't the best, but also Houston's defensive front is fantastic. But offensively, once Tooney slid out to left tackle, kind of settled on the offensive line, you could definitely see a comfortability from Mahomes in the quarterback spot, you know, kind of got everything clicking. Leaning more into, you know, RPOs, you know, kind of the quicker throws, getting the ball out of the hand, tied into Tooney playing left tackle was also, you know, Pat getting rid of the ball really quickly, and that's in part because we got some weapons back, you know, Hollywood Brown's back. DeAndre Hopkins, despite the low snap count last week, still did some good things in the offense, playoff Kelsey. So I think offensively, just having a better identity, understanding what they want to do, how they want to use Worthy is a big one. You know, he's kind of turned into what people thought was, oh, a speedster and he's going to be trick play. And, you know, first game of the year, he gets the reverse for a touchdown and he, you know, catches a long ball. Now he's kind of a do everything receiver. You know, he's a receiver who happens to have speed. He's not a trickster out there trying to, you know, open things up for other guys. So I think the biggest difference is offensively having that identity, knowing where to lean and early in the game, also knowing where to lean when things get tough throughout the course of the game, and, you know, just elevating your game, having more urgency into the playoff run. That's one thing that is really difficult. I mean, it's the human element. You can't quantify it, but I have thought it was interesting. I have, you know, thought it's been interesting throughout this course of the season that honestly, the New England guys in the media have been sticking up for the Chiefs a lot, understanding what they're going through, having to defend every single week, a team coming in, feeling that like it's their Super Bowl that week. Really only New England has gone through this in the past 25 years, the way the Chiefs are. And they're all saying, man, it's really tough. It's draining. It's hard to get up for every game the same way they're getting up for you. And so they have a lot of respect for what the Chiefs have done, you know, throughout the course of the last few years. And I think that is something to keep in consideration that, you know, there is a little bit more urgency from this team in the playoffs.
How would you assess Kansas City's run game right now? Because Pacheco doesn't look like the same guy that he was pre-knee injury. His playing time has dwindled each successive week since he's come back. And yes, Kareem Hunt has probably been a guy that's exceeded the expectations when they picked him up. But where do you see the effectiveness and consistency of their run game right now, coupled with some of the O-line shuffling they've had to do?
Yeah, I mean, it seems pretty apparent. It sucks for Pacheco, but I mean, Kareem's just the better running back right now. You know, it's tough to come back from, I think it was a broken lower leg or whatever it was. You know, it's tough to come back in the middle of the season and have the same burst and have the same confidence. Now, we've seen it in flashes, but, you know, for whatever reason, it seems like Kareem has gelled better with the offense since the injury and since Pacheco's come back. So I think you're going to, you know, see the team running him a little bit. You know, run game wise, it's interesting. Everyone always wants Andy Reid to run the football more. Whenever it seems like that's the focal point and that's the lean, the team isn't quite as successful. You know, using it as part of a balanced offense, as part of an offense that's throwing the football, you know, play action, all the other things, it is very effective and can be when it's the main thing that the team does and they try to go into a game and, you know, run the ball 55, 60% of the time. I feel like it typically isn't quite as successful. So I think you're going to see an emphasis on physicality from the offensive line, especially coming off a week where, you know, I feel like maybe a little bit of an underperformance against that Texans front. But I don't think that physicality has to be run game, run game, run game. We're going to force this. It's going to be in the quick game, in the play action game, where we can get hands on guys. We can be physical. We can, you know, cut guys, balls getting out, and we can chase downfield and maybe pick some guys off of piles. So I think physicality is going to be kind of the coaching point of the offensive line, really on both sides. I mean, I love your guys' offensive line and what they've done this year. But from the Chiefs' perspective, yeah, it's going to be leaning into that. Leaning into, you know, when we are calling these runs, we need them to be successful so we can continue calling more of them.
What's your thought about the success the Chiefs pass rush had last week? 8 sacks. Karlaftis has 3 sacks. I mean, just, of course, Chris Jones is a factor always. What led to that?
I mean, Chiefs doing good stuff. Spags doing good stuff. Honestly, this has kind of been the story of Houston's year. So as good as the Chiefs looked, I kind of look at it from Houston's perspective and how poor they've been all season protecting the passer. You're showing there, I mean, a tight end that's barely even attempting to block a defensive end is never going to end well. So I look at it as less, you know, this is maybe the true talent level of Kansas City. I think Chris Jones is still the matchup nightmare. He's the guy you got to account for. You know, Omenihu is probably the second best rusher one-on-one. Of course, you know, your guys' tackles are, you know, all pro level. So that's going to be a really interesting matchup to see if he can make some hay there. And, you know, Karloftis, despite the big game, two were against tight ends. One was against the tackle who was expecting some chip help from the tight end and kind of set him in a funky way. So maybe not the pure one-on-one wins you'd love to see out of the starting defensive end. So it's going to be a really, really great matchup. Like I said, Bills offensive line has been rolling all year. I think that's, you know, the key to Buffalo's season. The thing that, you know, I hate going national media, but the thing that people aren't talking about as much when you get into, you know, the talking point of this week, we don't have weapons. We don't have all this stuff. Like, yeah, those five guys are a freaking weapon. Yeah. And, you know, they bring it every week and they allow the offense to do what they need to do.
And taking that a step further, you know, Spags is a guy that's not afraid to blitz. They blitz at the fifth highest rate in the NFL this year. In the last meeting back in week 11, he blitzed Josh almost 38% of the time, and it was relatively effective. Josh only had 50% completion rate. But historically, he's got a 123 passer rating this year against the blitz. So what do you think Spags dials up, and do you think it changes playing at home, knowing that the Bills are going on silent count and stuff?
Yeah, it's going to be a bit more effective when you're at home and when the other team's on the silent count, just because someone's head is down, whether that's the center, whether that's the guard. You know, you're not going to be able to hear very much on especially second and third and longs there in Kansas City. So there's going to be, you know, an emphasis on Josh having to walk up into the line to tell them where to go. You know, that takes precious seconds off the clock, so your operation is going to have to be good. But I feel like the magic of Spags is not that he blitzes at the volume that he does. It's how effective he is when he blitzes and how he understands the other team's protections. You know, you're typically seeing free runners come and loose. You're typically seeing, even if it's not a free runner, you know, a guy like Justin Reed, who's a matchup nightmare for a running back. You know, so Spags is able to say, all right, we're going to get this safety on this running back. We're not going to allow the offensive line to count for him and to make that block easier. So, yeah, Spags is going to dial it up. He's going to have to pick and choose. I mean, if you start blitzing Allen a little too heavy and you're not being smart on the back end, you're opening up massive voids for him to run and for him to have a huge game on the ground when he breaks a tackle, as he, you know, probably will, being a massive dude who moves the way he does. So you have to be smart with it. You have to pick and choose. You have to kind of understand, you know, the passing concepts. If it's a second and eight, you know, this blitz is going to be good both against, you know, the pass that we think they're going to throw, but also if they're leaning into the run game, it's also a great run blitz. So towing that fine line and, you know, not just doing it to do it, because as you said, I mean, Allen's numbers this season when he's being blitzed are pretty incredible.
Mitchell, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it. Enjoy the weekend, man.
Thanks, you too. Yeah, it's going to be an amazing game. Can't wait to watch.
Should be, for sure. Thanks, Mitchell. Appreciate the time. That's Mitchell Schwartz, former Chiefs offensive lineman, Super Bowl champ, kind of giving us the 411 on the Chiefs.
No, it's an Allen keeper, and he's going to run it in! A four-yard touchdown run on the read option keeper by Allen. 17 is a scoring machine. Simply put, no one scores points like Josh Allen. He is the Michael Jordan of the NFL.
Highlights of the game brought to you by Northland Workforce Training Center. It is Victory Monday. Another game is on the way. Sunday, 6:30, Arrowhead Stadium. Chris Brown on the Western Hotline. He'll be at Arrowhead, a place you've been before, Chris, many times.
Yeah, probably too many times. But, hey, you got to beat the best to be the best. So, let's go. Kansas City, here we come.
Nice to earn the trip there for the Bills in a game against the Ravens that they were in control of most of and got a little tight at the end. But it ends up being a great night at the stadium. What about it will you remember?
I'll probably remember Terrell Bernard's punch out on Mark Andrews. That might be the best forced fumble I've ever seen in my life, based on time of the game, score of the game, the stakes involved. I think people were concerned that momentum had shifted in favor of Baltimore. I mean, even if they tie that game, Josh has the ball with 1:33 left and has to get in field goal range. I still like my odds, but I think people were gripping at that point. And for Bernard to make that play, I mean, let's not forget, the Bills are the only team that's beaten the Chiefs who sealed the game at the end. Terrell Bernard with an interception. So that guy is a difference maker, 150%, and that's probably what I'll remember most about that game.
How'd you feel about their overall defensive performance? It felt like a pretty good night for Sean McDermott. I know there were no punts, but you get the three turnovers, and Henry had pretty, you know, like as a defense, I think you would take what he ended up with. So it seemed like a pretty good night, even though the Ravens still got their yards.
Yeah, I think people are going to forget this a lot from this game, but in the second quarter, Ravens have first and goal from the 8-yard line, and they stop Henry for a 1-yard loss. They sack Lamar, and they have to settle for, like, what was it, a 26-yard field goal. And I thought that had an impact on how Todd Monken called the rest of the game. He got in the red zone, and he starts throwing the ball. End of the game. 2-point conversion. You're not running that with Henry? I was stupefied that they threw the ball. Now, it should have worked. Mark Andrews is open, and he drops the football. But I think Monken was totally impacted by the way that red zone possession went, especially playing from behind. And I hope that's not lost on people. And the other thing I'll say is this concerning the defensive effort. The Ravens had 5 losses in the regular season. In every single one of those losses, Derrick Henry had fewer than 20 carries and fewer than 90 rushing yards. So that's the magic number. You hold him under 20 carries, you hold him under 90 yards, you have a good chance to win the football game. Now, all those teams that beat the Ravens, they won by 7, 5, 3, and 2 points. So it's going to be tight, but if you do that, you got a good chance to win, and that's exactly what the Bills did, and I think that's also a reason why they tried to run the ball for as long as they did, because to get to under 20 carries, you had to have the ball, so they didn't.
Bills' commitment to the run game, we saw all three running backs make plays in this game, including, you know, Ray Davis. It's funny, Chris, when I looked at the box score afterwards, only 4 carries. It felt like he had more because he had important runs along the way.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting. I mean, James Cook, as we know, has 16 rushing touchdowns in the regular season, had another one last week against Denver, and he subbed out for Ray Davis on that first touchdown carry of 5 yards. And let's not forget, Ray Davis just got out of concussion protocol. So I was surprised, but he made it work, and give credit to the offensive line, which I think is quickly becoming the strongest part and most reliable part of this football team. I know they never really get all the credit they deserve, but they're the reason why the Bills, you know, were able to put up 27 points, because it was largely a rushing effort. And to do that in back-to-back games against the number 3 run defense in football and the number 1 run defense in football, I mean, they just hung 357 rushing yards on 2 of the 3 best run defenses in the league. That's miraculous as far as I'm concerned. And I think it demonstrates just how good that group is.
We'll see what the game plan is going into this week. When the Bills and Chiefs played the first time, Josh threw it 40 times. He was their leading ball carrier. He had the most yards on the ground. So, you know, it's matchup specific. And these two teams, of course, know each other quite well. Kansas City has had a great defense. They're healthier. The Bills, you know, got a little healthier. We'll have to see what happens with Taylor Rapp. If there is an injury back there, Chris, what do you think the Bills can do in the secondary? You think they've got the horses, Cole Bishop coming in that spot, if he's pressed into duty in a big, big moment?
Yeah, I think you're happy that Cole Bishop got playing time this year. The time that he had to step on the field earlier in the season, I think, is only going to pay dividends. And I'll just say this, if he has to play in place of Rapp, I actually like that better than him playing in place of Hamlin, because when he was at the University of Utah, it was largely a man-to-man defense, and he played a lot up near the line of scrimmage or at the second level of the defense. So him playing in Taylor Rapp's role, I think, is more comfortable for him than in Damar Hamlin's role, just from a pure experience standpoint. Not saying he can't play free safety and man center field and be a half-field safety guy or whatever, but I think he feels most comfortable as a rookie right now in that role. So if you needed him for one of the two, that's the better one for him right now at this point in his career.
What do you think, Chris, the right way to evaluate the Ravens and how their season ends yesterday, especially with Jackson? Because he makes the mistakes in the first half, but he really kind of kept them in it in the second half. But those mistakes count. So I don't know how much blame do you feel like he's deserved. And I would, by the way, in saying that, like as we're seeing early on this morning, like he's not getting crushed. Like there are a plenty that are defending his performance, maybe even too much, some could say.
Yeah, I find it a little ironic personally, because I know if Josh Allen lost this game and had two turnovers, he'd be getting crucified for giveaways. Absolutely grilled for giving the ball away if he had that kind of performance with, you know, 254 yards passing and everything else. He would be getting grilled today. There's not even a shadow of a doubt in my mind. So to see Lamar Jackson in the biggest game of the year get a free pass, sorry. I mean, I love Lamar Jackson. He's a great player. He had only four interceptions throughout the regular season. He has two giveaways in this game. I mean, I'm sorry. You got to play your best on that day, as Steve Tasker always says on One Bills Live. He did not. And what's his history in playoff games? He'll give you a few, and he did. And he lost the same way that he always has, by giving the football away. And the narrative does not exist for Lamar Jackson that way at all. And it really stupefies me. Maybe it's because he's got two MVPs, and probably he'll get another one. But, my God, I mean, sorry, you hit a nerve there.
That's all right. That's all right. Chris Brown joining us on the Western Hotline. But we'll talk on Friday, but an early thought on Kansas City?
Here's the thing. The Bills have played almost airtight football from a ball security standpoint and from not making giant blunders, and you're going to have to keep playing that way, because the reason the Chiefs are so successful and win this as many Super Bowls as they had is they play much the way New England did during their dynasty. They play airtight, sound, fundamental football, and they wait for you to make a mistake, and they capitalize on it, and they win a football game. That's how the Bills won yesterday. So I'm encouraged by the fact that they're playing the same style of football to win games against really good football teams. But Kansas City's in their house, and they are as resourceful as anybody has been. Let's not forget, they've won 15 games by the skin of their teeth almost every week. When it's tight, they're comfortable.
Chris Brown on the Wester Hotline. Chris, thanks again. We'll chat Friday. Enjoy the week.
Look forward to it, guys.
All right. Championship week. The Bills and the Chiefs. What's the line? We all know it. Where else would you rather be? Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here, joined by Odyssey NFL insider Ross Tucker. Make sure to check out the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, daily NFL podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Ross, what's up?
What's up is I got to start by telling you guys a story before we even get into that epic win for the Bills.
Okay.
You guys ready?
So, I am definitely
so ready. Yes. Yeah.
So Zach just did the update, and he mentioned that Kevin O'Connell got a new deal and that the Vikings are also working on a new extension for their general manager, Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, he went to Princeton and was a couple years younger than me, and interestingly, did not play a sport, did not play football, did not play basketball. He's a taller guy, and I guess he played intramural basketball. So a couple years ago, I'm doing a Vikings-Colts game, and I'm talking with one of the Vikings scouts, you know, front office members that I know. And I said, so this guy went to Princeton. And they said, yeah, he knows you. I said, oh, he does? I don't know him. And they said, yeah, evidently in intramural basketball, you elbowed him really hard. So I then meet him that day, And when I see him in person, I do kind of remember. You know, what would happen was I'd be playing intramural hoops, and I'm like 290 pounds. And so these, like, skinny regular students, like, I don't know, they thought they could just, like, push me and lean on me as much as they wanted to because I was so much bigger than them. But that they were incorrect. Like, that was not correct. I was not here for that.
You weren't having it.
I was not having it. You think I've been lifting weights my whole life so you can push me? No, absolutely not. So, evidently, you know, I let them do it a couple times, and then maybe, like, the third time down, I elbowed him very hard in the chest, and he did not do it again the entire rest of the game. So he was telling me the story, and he was laughing, thankfully. But I do think it's fair to say I will not be getting any type of executive job with the Vikings anytime soon. And let that be a lesson to any high school kids or elementary school kids listening. Be careful who you elbow in intramural hoops or in sports. They might end up being one of the 32 NFL GMs, and you can just cross that team off the list because even though I don't remember at all, and he's just one of probably dozens of kids I elbowed at some point during my time at Princeton, he vividly remembers it. So that's my Kwesi Adofo-Mensah story that I thought of as Zach just gave the update.
He should, in my opinion, consider it a plus for you. Because I think maybe what the non, you know, football players, the non-big-time athletes at the school would be thinking in intramurals is, well, like, this guy's not going to care about it. They, you know, maybe they can take advantage of you, but you're not going to take it as seriously because you're on the football team. I mean, you might go to the NFL. And instead, Ross, what do they find out? What do they come to learn? I'm a competitor.
The bull, you're getting the horns.
That's it.
There it is.
So he should like you more for it.
So this is like so two thoughts on that. Number one, this is when like Shaq was like at his peak. So I think that everybody, I was kind of like the Shaq of the intramural league. So I think that they thought it was like a hack of Shaq, and I was like, yeah, no, we're not doing that. Like, secondly. That's a great point by you, Mike. Who's to say he would have been the GM of the Vikings if not for that seminal moment in his life, right? Like I think that maybe that fueled him to this success, or maybe that was, like, maybe he was like, you know what? That guy was such a jerk. I'm going to get into the football industry, even though I'm not a football player, and I'm going to rise to be a GM someday and whatever. So, I mean, basically, he should be trying to hire me is what we're saying.
Sure, yeah. Hey, maybe the contact sports aren't for me. Get me the numbers.
Right.
And at least he knows if I ever worked for him or worked with him, I wouldn't take crap from anybody, that's for sure.
Be the first guy in, the last guy out. There's no question about it. All right, Ross, here we go. Let's hear you on Bills-Ravens first. I mean, incredible game. The Bills win it on the two-point miss late. Three turnovers to none. The Bills, it's been the story of their year, Ross. 19 straight games without losing the turnover battle once.
Yeah, that is bananas. And as we discussed last week, many people would tell you that that is statistically impossible and that it's luck. But they'd also say the same thing about the Chiefs winning 16 straight one-score games. And considering I think this will be a one-score game, it feels like one of those streaks has to end, right? Like either the Bills lose the turnover battle and lose a one-score game, or the Bills win the turnover battle again and the Chiefs finally lose a one-score game. But I feel like one of those things is going to happen. I guess I'll start with the game. I think I was just really impressed by the Bills. Really, really impressed. You know, they did a really nice job overall against Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry. You know, they did not get run all over. I thought McDermott and Bobby Babich had an excellent plan. They came out very physical. You know, I kind of love the Bills' O-line right now. You know, I don't always go back. If I'm not calling the game, I'm not going to go back and watch the coaching tape. But I've seen some clips that other people have posted of, like, Spencer Brown
dude,
on that first drive.
Yeah.
I love that dude. I love, like, Spencer Brown is not messing around. Spencer Brown is like me, but talented. It's amazing. It's, like, fun to watch. So I love that. I love that the Bills did not get bullied by the Ravens. If anything, I felt like they kind of bullied the Ravens. They came out in the second half and ran it. The other thing is we were curious about Lamar in playoff games, and, you know, he did not play well. And you know, I guess you can credit the Bills a little bit, but the interception was just terrible, and the fumble was horrendous. I mean, those both seem like unforced errors to me. And, you know, that there's a tendency for Lamar Jackson to do that in the playoffs, right or wrong. There's also a tendency, it feels like, for Josh Allen to make critical plays and not make critical mistakes in the playoffs. And pretty clearly he's going to have to do that again on Sunday. But, yeah, those are the things that jumped out at me, I think. The Bills' ability to run the ball. Really, I would say the Bills' physicality on both sides and then not making the mistakes. And they still probably should have been tied and had to go to overtime, which says something about something in terms of the Ravens and how good the Ravens are. But they didn't, and they don't. And so the Bills move on. One of the biggest wins they've had as a franchise in a long time, because the Ravens are that good. The Ravens are a Super Bowl winning caliber team, and the Bills got it done. But it's interesting because, you know, no one's really going to talk about that much or remember it that much if they lose on right. Sunday. You know, this is the game that they have to win. Everybody knows it. And everybody's known it for years, that this is the game they have to win. Funny, because I called that Texans-Chiefs game, and I was thinking during the game, man, it'd be great for the Bills if the Texans could somehow win this game. And the Texans, you know, typical game where it felt like they got the better of the action a lot of the game against the Chiefs, and yet the Chiefs win by two scores. I mean, how did that happen? That you outgain them by like 150 yards, and yet the other team still win by two scores. Probably the same way it happens that you know they're going to throw the ball to Travis Kelce, and then they still do. I mean, it's really remarkable. I'll probably post this on social media over the next couple of days at Ross Tucker NFL. But if you're whoever you're watching the game with on Sunday, okay, anytime it's a high leverage situation for either team, okay, with the ball. If it's the Chiefs, just say, man, I wouldn't be surprised if they throw it to Kelce here. And if it's the Bills, say, you really got to watch Josh Allen's legs here. You're probably going to be right 92% of the time in this game if you just say those two things. In any, like, high-leverage, third-down, fourth-down situation, just say those two things, you'll be right more often than you're wrong, that's for sure.
I know everyone and their mother has been trying to solve this Kelce thing for, you know, most of his career at this point. And we're so far into it, and he still, even though sometimes when he's running with the ball, he looks like he might be, you know, a very old man, you know, football age-wise anyway, he still gets it done. How do they do it? Like, teams want to take him away, I assume, and just can't.
Yeah, there's a couple different things there. I mean, first of all, I was talking with him before the game and, you know, prepping for that game. He has the most receptions ever for anybody in the playoffs. And he's second behind Jerry Rice in yards and touchdowns in the playoffs. And I said, dude, I was reading your stats. Like, it's unbelievable. He's like, you know, if you're playing enough games. I'm like, no, dude, Jerry Rice. Like, I think he's only, like, 34, that he might have missed Jerry Rice or doesn't know him. But, like, for me in the 80s and 90s, like, Jerry Rice, dude. I was like, Travis, Jerry Rice, bro. Jerry Rice. Like Jerry Rice and you. And he's like, yeah, we'll see. I think the biggest thing is, first of all, I think you should play man on him. I think if you play zone, you're dead because – I think it's his, like, AAU basketball background, but he has, like, an unbelievable, unbelievable feel for getting open in zone coverage in football, right? He just is like totally dialed in against zone coverage because it's just like he's trying to get open in basketball for, you know, to get open to get his shot off. And so he just has an incredible, incredible feel for zone coverage. So I think you're better off. And so what really happens is, Bulldog, is you can't, like, I wouldn't recommend playing drop zone, which is where you, like, drop to spots. What I would say instead is it's got to be sort of like a matchup zone, if you will. You know what I mean? Where, okay, you can go in zone coverage, but if he's even near your vicinity, you got to totally just lock
Leave
on.
Leave your zone and get over there. Or, right.
Yeah. Or play man and just go there with man coverage, play man, and put somebody that you think can cover him man-to-man on him and give it your best shot. I jokingly posted, you know, at Ross Tucker NFL that if I'm ever an NFL defensive coordinator, which will never happen, but if I'm ever an NFL defensive coordinator in a playoff game, I promise you guys, promise, that I will double-team him like he's a gunner on a punt every single play in a playoff game, and that even if my team loses 220-0, we will not let him catch a pass. Because it's, I feel like that's what Belichick would do. Belichick would be like, you know what? I just don't care. I just don't care. They're gonna have to prove that they can go ahead and beat me.
He said big games in each of the team's three playoff meetings over the last 4 years in the regular season this year. And he had, for a couple of years, several quiet weeks in the regular season. 2-for-8 was all that the Chiefs got from Travis Kelce when they lost here in November. Ross, one thing you said last week was that part of the thinking looking forward to the Buffalo-Baltimore winner and Kansas City, if the Chiefs were to have beaten Houston, is the toll that Bills Ravens would take on the winner. And there's also an extra day of rest for the Chiefs. There's also a home field, so no travel. You were at the game in Kansas City and saw just how competitive it was and then watched the game Sunday. What do you think of that now?
Yeah, I mean, I think all of those are small edges to the Chiefs. You know, the extra day, the playing at home, the officiating, the you know, the fact that the Bills had to play the Ravens, all small edges. But, you know, I just also watched the Commanders go into Detroit after a hard-fought game against the Bucs on a short week, and they took it to the Lions. So, while I think all of those things are factors, it clearly it's not like they can't be overcome, I would say.
Right. One question on Sean McDermott. So, we've been all over it, you know, last couple of years. Will McDermott be up to the occasion? AFC Championship now, and a lot has been written and said about his having changed, just his demeanor, maybe level of intensity, scaling back a little bit, whatever is exactly right here. I wondered, and this may be the kind of question where you could go long. We don't have very much time. But what is the relationship between the head coach and most of the players? Like, is it, in your experience in the league, is it pretty, you know, all the time, pretty constant where you're interacting with the head coach, or is it more your position coaches or coordinators? I just wonder what the effects really might be if McDermott, you know, were different this year meaningfully.
I think most players interact with the head coach very infrequently is probably the norm. I mean, I wasn't in New England that long, but I distinctly remember maybe three times that Belichick said anything to me. you know? One time I fell on the ground and he said, "Get off the ground, will you?" or something like that with some expletives in there. One time he walked by me. We were playing the Jags in the playoffs, and the starting center for the Jags was a Princeton teammate of mine. And he just walked by me and said, "We got half the Princeton team in this game." And then when they traded me, he called me into his office and told me why I was being traded. And that was it. Now, I wasn't like a starter with the Patriots, so maybe that's part of it. I certainly interacted more with Greg Williams and Mike Mularkey when I was in Buffalo and starting, but not that much, really. I mean, you really don't. I'm assuming the quarterbacks interact more with him, or maybe like, you know, the best players on the team or the guys in the leadership council, but not much. But that, I don't think it's really about necessarily the personal interaction as much as sort of what he's like in front of the room and his messaging and how he conducts himself in that way, I would say.
Yeah, I've liked thinking about, like Mike has said, there have been a couple of very long-form pieces by a couple of friends of ours who, well, one of whom used to work with us but has been gone a while now, but still, about this subject. And it tripped a wire for me, Ross, think about that, you know, in order to lead the group, you know, the 60 men, the 53 guys on game day, whatever, stand up in the meeting room on a Saturday or a Sunday morning, whatever it is, and, you know, part of your job is to have them mentally focused and not have the pressure eat them up. And I think when you're the coach and you're the leader, you have to learn how to do that yourself, too. And, you know, it's been a long time now. He's had the job, and I don't mean to make it sound like he's been on training wheels this whole time, but I feel like he might have learned, especially last year. He had a very rough time three-quarters of the way through last season when they lost that Philly game. Long-form story by one of these same writers, Tyler Dunn, GoLongTD.com, good buddy of ours. You know, that was heavy on McDermott, and there was a lot of criticisms in there, and I think you go through all these different things in the public eye, and hopefully it spits you out with a better ability to handle the criticism you get, the pressure that you're all feeling, and just a better command of how to help guys through that than you had 3 or 4 years ago.
I think you're probably right. I think it'd be weird if you didn't, right? I mean, I think it'd be weird in life if you didn't learn from previous failings or previous mistakes. And I also think, not that you guys are going to ask me or not, but I also just kind of think it's time. You know, I remember growing up when Steve Young and the Niners, they could not get over the hump against the Cowboys until they did. And even when I was playing the Colts and the Patriots, Peyton Manning, they could not get over the hump against Brady and the Patriots until they did. And I think it's time. I think it's time. It's Buffalo's turn. It's Josh Allen's turn. And I think it's going to happen for him. And I certainly hope it happens for him for a lot of different reasons.
You working either game?
I am. I'm on sideline for the NFC Championship game, Eagles-Commanders, which is ideal because that's not far from my house. And then as soon as the game's over, I can watch the Bills and the Chiefs and have a rooting interest in that one. It's probably the best way to describe it.
Whatever happens, we'll remember it for many, many years. Thanks for today, Ross. We'll talk next week.
Of course. Can't wait. Have fun. See you guys.
All right. Have a good week. That's our Odyssey NFL insider, Ross Tucker. Make sure to check out the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, daily NFL podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.